This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 16, brought to you by Cricmax. A great collapse and a great recovery. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, brought to you by Cricmax, we talk about getting bowled out for three and how to recover in an extraordinary fashion. We also answer your questions about whether a batting average of 31 is any good or not, and how to hit full tosses to the boundary and feel like a superstar. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to playing and coaching better cricket wherever you are in the world. Whoever you are, as long as you've got an ambition to improve, then this is the show to listen, to help you. Now, my name is David Hinchliffe. I am Director of Coaching at Pitch Vision Academy, and I host this show every week. And every week I'm joined by a panel of guests. This week, we're a little bit thin on the ground when it comes to the live panel, but don't fear. We have something special in store for you. Joining me on the line is the man in charge of cricket at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Welcome to the show again, Lavers.
Hi, David. Are you okay?
I am keeping very well, thank you. And
good stuff.
Regular listeners will know, of course, that this is round about the point that I introduce Mark Garraway, Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School, of course. But Garras has been called away at the last minute. He has had an impromptu rearrangement of a fixture, and he's not available to record the show this week, but he popped on a little bit earlier on in the day and him and I chatted about the question. So we pre-recorded his answers, and that'll be coming up a little bit later on in the show. So it'll be interesting, as always, to hear what Gareth has to say about that. One thing that's happened this week and has been all over the Twitter and all over the news, the regular news, is the poor guys at Wirral Cricket Club. The worst possible thing has happened. First game of the season, you're excited, you're enthusiastic, you're ready to go. You come up against an opposition who you feel like you might be able to beat. You bowl them out for, I think it was something like 120, and you think, oh, we're going well here. This could be our first win of the season. And then disaster strikes. Lavers, they were bowled out for three.
I know. At first, I didn't know what to think. I didn't know if it was a setup or a promotional stunt, or it was a typo. You know, sometimes you do get these typos, don't you, where someone fills out the card run online and it gets sent off. Someone sees it and suddenly it's gone round 100 people and then 1,000 people, etc., before anyone's actually realised the mistake. But three. Where do you go from there?
The only way's up.
Being bowled out for three, and I think if anyone's been through the scorecard, they very much were bowled out for three. I think there were seven dismissals which were either bowled or LBW. So credit clearly to the Haslington Cricket Club.
That's right. Yeah,
Haslington. I think
they
got that right,
didn't they? We know that.
And I think one of the things that you always talk about is bowling in good areas, and early season you would say that bowling stump to stump and being full is often a good place to start. And one of the quotes that I read from the Wirral guys was sometimes you either laugh about it or cry about it, but ultimately nothing's really changed with us as a group, so all we can do is laugh about it. I think they had a pre-season game the week before where they chased down 200. So, I think it's one of those things that you'll just have to put behind you. Obviously, there may be some discussions as a group as to why things went wrong, and it's not going to be their... I wouldn't imagine it's their skills that are massively the problem if they were able to chase down a previous score the week before in a friendly or previous seasons where they've obviously been reasonably successful. But possibly they should just have a little bit of a think about their decision making and have a look at how other people are getting out during games and see if they can learn in match a little bit quicker and try and identify problems and identify how they can go about countering things that are going on as the game's happening rather than having to review things when it's too late.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it would be, I think, a mistake if any side who's had this kind of situation, I think every team, if you play in them for any length of time, then you know that this kind of thing can happen. You can collapse, maybe not for three, but you can collapse and suddenly find yourself bundled out for a low score. It's happened at international level, it's happened at club level, it happens everywhere. So I think, though, it would be a mistake to go, oh, well, you know, it was just a fluke that, you know, this is the lowest score in league cricket for over 100 years. It must just be a fluke. We'll just get on with it next week without even thinking about why that might have happened in the first place. I mean, yeah, just looking at those dismissals, just looking at the, you know, obviously the opposition knew their game plan, they knew their tactic, which was to bowl straight, and it worked. But, you know, you do have to ask yourself, was it a complete minefield? Probably not. You know, it's very rare that a side gets bowled out for a low score and it's completely down to brilliant bowling from the opposition.
Especially if you do look at the scorecard, which I've got before me now, actually. I mean, they were chasing 108.
Oh, there you go.
Going through the opposition, so the Haslington innings, there were only three guys made it to double figures. So it obviously wasn't an easy pitch. But one of those guys got 26 at number three. And then number six got 34 and number eight got 26. So obviously tough conditions, but not impossible conditions. And the other thing that sometimes you get on a really tough pitch is you look at how the runs are scored, and often the runs are all scored in boundaries, but there are actually only 40 or 44 runs scored in boundaries on the day, so which is 40% pretty much. So the ball's been worked around and deflected around a little bit along the way as well, so it hasn't been a sort of block or bash pitch. There's been a little bit more skill to it, and they've managed to work the ball around for lots of ones and twos in between. So the pitch was clearly not great. You'd like to think that batting second, you've learned a little bit, yes, as a bowler, which they clearly had done, but also as a batter, you learn a little bit of where scoring opportunities come on that type of pitch and where we should be looking to try and score, and maybe where we should be resisting the urge to hit the ball or play across the line or whatever type of shot it might be. So a little bit of learning in game might have been useful, I think.
If you are in trouble as a batting team, then the best thing you can do is just not even think about the wickets column. Just think... How are we going to play for the next three overs, the next five overs, whatever it is? And then the wickets column makes no difference. It's a batting partnership between two players. That's always going to be the case until you're bowled out. So just forget about what the wicket says, whether the wicket says zero or whether the wicket says nine. You're going to bat in a certain way, and that's all you're going to think about. And if you can focus on that, that's going to help you not think about the wobble so much, and that wobble turning into a collapse, and that collapse turning into getting bowled out. But think about the task at hand, which is, I think, one of the key elements to staying calm and staying focused when you're batting. And certainly something that Michael Bevan has talked about on the Pitch Vision Academy pages a lot in the past.
The other point I'd like to make is I'd be interested to know, I would imagine, and you can probably feedback to me on this, David, as to what you think, but would you imagine the keeper was stood back given we've got two opening bowlers on a tough pitch? Would you imagine the keeper was back?
You always try and stand back at the start of an innings because new ball, getting the nick gives you more chance of catching it, but not necessarily. But yeah, let's, for the sake of argument, let's say the keeper was back.
You'd think that batting out of your crease and almost getting across in front of your stumps but out of your crease would be a way of negating the bowled, and then simultaneously with the distance down the pitch negating the LBW. So maybe that is something they could have looked to do.
Yep.
The reason I thought they may have been back is there were two catches by the keeper, which isn't impossible up to the stumps, obviously, but
makes it harder,
was imagining it was more likely to happen if they were back to get two catches off for the keeper. But that's not necessarily true. So
yeah, I mean it's a tricky one to say, because when you know the bowlers are bowling stump to stump, you know they're trying to hit the wickets. That's the tactic. Let's hit the wickets. Let's get LBWs. Let's get them bowled out. Then if the keeper's a decent keeper, then he's going to say, right, I'm going to stand up.
Yeah, that's an interesting area. Maybe they hadn't done that in that scenario. There's another situation which I'm actually just sending to you now, David. So as we're talking, you may pick it up on your email if that's possible. A big clash between Rajshashi and Chittagong in the Bangladesh National Cricket League. Rajshashi were batting first, and they had lost their first six wickets for 77 runs. Now, obviously, in a four-day game, that's not a great start. 77 for six. Have you seen it yet, David?
Yes, I've got it here in front of me now, yeah.
Okay, great now, this is a classic example. This is something that the Wirral, hopefully, can look to for some positives in how to get out of that situation, because they'd been batting and their top six had they were at 77 for six, but their top six batters scored 0, 8, 9, 22, 8 and 6. And coming in at number seven was Ferhad Reza, and he forged a tidy little partnership with Sanjumul Islam, and his partnership for the seventh wicket was, I can't really do the maths immediately, but it looks like about 347 for the seventh wicket. And then the partnership for the eighth wicket was a further 224. So scores of 259, 172 and 168 down at numbers 7, 8 and 9, I think it was, or 8, 9 and 10, was one way to go about responding to some obviously tough conditions. So
yeah,
it's a really good example of how people can adapt, and how, however gloomy the situation looks, if you play the next ball, as you said before, and treat it all as this is a partnership. Other people may have failed, but that doesn't mean we're going to fail.
Right, let's wrap up this section then with a yes-no round. Three questions, and we can only answer yes or no, no matter how much more we want to say. And I have Gara's responses already here, so I know what he says, Lavers, but let's see if you agree. First question is, if you build a foundation, it's there for good.
No.
And Gara's says yes. Second question, Yorkers are still the king of death bowling.
Yes.
And Gara's also said yes. Third question, slip catching is under-practiced.
Yes.
And Gara's also said yes. Okay, it's time to dip into the mailbag again. And this week we have a couple of questions, like every week, that have been sent in from listeners to the show. And they want to know the answers to the question, but they're also keen to win a prize, which is, of course, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can find out more by going to the Pitch Vision Academy pages online to see what's available there. And if you want to send in your own question, you can email that into us at coach@pitchvision.com. And we also have other ways of contacting us at the end of the show. So as I mentioned before, Gara's questions have been pre-recorded. So sit back, Lavers, and have a listen to the question.
Okay, good stuff.
Yeah, sit back, Lavers, have a listen to the question. And we will get your answer after Gara's pre-recorded question. So the first question this week is from Anaf. And Anaf says, I'm a 13-year-old player. I play for my school team and an academy. My question is about shot selection at the end of an innings. When I'm at the crease, I play unorthodox shots. My coach tells me to play orthodox shots at the end. Who should I listen to, me or my coach? My batting average is around 31. Is that good enough to get me into my academy team, or do I need my average to be higher?
Well, first and foremost, I'm going to go to the average. It's all about context to me. So if we're talking about an average of 31 at the end of a T20 game, batting in sort of like six or seven, and having to face at the end, then I'm all over that. 31 would be game changing. On a regular basis, because you wouldn't have many balls to play off of, and you'd be scoring at a rapid rate there. So I'd be all over that. So it's all about context. If an overall batting average over all of the formats that you play and all the matches that you play in the year, and if you've batted in the top four, for example, 31 would probably be seen as okay, but not anything that's going to get anybody too excited. The other challenge is what is your academy? Are we talking about an academy which is a first-class linked academy? Are we talking about somebody who set up a brilliant coaching program that has called themselves an academy? So that, again, there's a context there. I would suggest that you'd want to up your average as high as you can. 31 as a top three batter wouldn't necessarily get everybody jumping up and down to get onto a first-class academy in England. But if you are a number seven who's scoring, averaging 31 and striking over 100, then you probably would be. So context is everything, and I can't give you anything more than that based on the question that you've given. The second thing about unorthodoxy and orthodoxy is what is most effective for you. And I think we've also always got to have a look at outcome. And so if we take Joss Butler as an example, he worked very much off of an unorthodox at the time approach, which was his flip shots up over the top of fine leg and over the top of third man. And he became attractive for selectors because he had that in his locker. But also what he's been able to do over time is to build in some orthodox shots as well. So he's now able to get the ball over the keeper, get the ball over fine leg, get the ball over short third man, but also has the capacity to clear the rope straight back over the bowler's head on a regular basis with a relatively conventional shot, and also hit the ball over wide mid-off and extra cover and over the top of square leg over around to the cow fielding position that we know and love. So he's developed a bit of unorthodoxy at the earliest part of his career, and now he's added orthodoxy to it. The question is, what gives you the best outcome at the moment? If it is, as you say, the flip shots and the unorthodox shots, then get really good at those. But at some stage, captains and bowlers are going to get a bit smart to that. They'll start setting fields which can counteract your unorthodoxy, and then it's really about how much do you want to develop the orthodox shots to be able to stretch the game. You cannot set a field in international cricket nowadays if somebody can hit you down the ground and back over the top of the keeper's head and fine leg's head, because you're stretching the game 180 degrees and you can't defend both ends. So I like the fact that you've got unorthodox. There will come a time where you need to stretch the game more than in that sector that you're hitting the ball into. And to me, give us a bit more information about where you bat, who the academy is that you're talking about, and I'll be able to give you a more definitive answer about your average.
So as usual, a very comprehensive answer from Garrers. But Lavers, what have you got to add to that, or have you got a different angle on the whole thing?
Firstly, I think it sounds encouraging. I mean, obviously, it does depend on the level that you're playing at and how an average of 31 sort of fits into the grand scheme of things. I know if you were averaging 31 up at the Wirral, you'd probably take it. But depending on where you're playing and the level and the format of cricket, then it's obviously relevant to you. So you kind of know where that fits in yourself. It'd be interesting to hear what these unorthodox shots are, because I think as cricket's developed over the last, certainly the last sort of 5 to 10 years, it's interesting to see what is an unorthodox shot now. I know that we have a few guys at school at Portsmouth Grammar where the deemed unorthodox shots, like the ramps and the reverse sweeps, probably take preference over a lot of the conventional shots due to their own personal skill set and confidence in their ability to play those shots. So for them, it's what works, and it works better for them. So as slightly alluding to what Gareth said, that you need to go with what works for you.
It's more about risk, about the risk and your chance of executing whatever that particular shot is. If you're really good at playing the reverse sweep and you can back yourself to play it 99 times out of 100, then that is a low risk shot for you as a player. Whereas, you know, if you're not quite so good at playing the on drive, and if you try and play the on drive and you get it wrong and you spoon up to mid on, then that's a higher risk shot for you as a player. So I think rather than saying orthodox versus unorthodox, I think that's a slightly old fashioned way of looking at it. What we're really saying nowadays is there's no such thing as orthodox or unorthodox, is there? It's just, how risky is this shot? How much risk do you want to take in the situation that you're in? And then play to your strengths.
Risk reward is something that's always talked about with cricketers and managing to understand your own game. And I think in a coach's situation, very much understand your player's game is key to how you train, and also how you analyse a performance. And maybe you should just be looking a little bit about what he does in training. And it might be that the coach is actually thinking more long term and is actually thinking, well, this guy plays well, but maybe doesn't have the classical basics. But if we can install those orthodox cricket shots in the player long term, then potentially he has the ability to play at a higher level. There are always going to be a manner of cricket shots which don't suit certain conditions. And if we find ourselves in a situation where we're not allowed to, or the conditions don't suggest that that's the best way to play, then we do need to refer to these more orthodox shots sometimes. It sounds like a bit of communication would be great as well. And rather than being black and white and saying, well, either I'm playing orthodox or unorthodox, keep playing the way you play if it's successful. But there's no reason why you can't develop other options as you go along.
To give you an example of the other side of the coin, I mean, I was saying there that, you know, if you're playing on orthodox shots and it's working, carry on with it. Don't worry about the word unorthodox at all. The other side of the coin, we have a player in our club who is extremely good at working straight balls through mid-wicket. He's a very wristy player, good touch player, good timing. He can flick the ball pretty much anywhere between backward square leg and wide of mid-wicket's left hand to any ball that's on the stumps, which looks very, very risky, you know, because especially if the ball's on off stump and he's flicking it through mid-wicket, you're thinking, oh my God, he's going to get bowled any minute. But he's only good at that after about 15 to 20 runs. If he tries to do that in the first 15 runs to 20 runs, there's a fairly high chance that he'll get out bowled. So what we worked on was him playing straighter, having a straighter option at the start of his innings until he got comfortable, when he was pushing a few singles to mid-on or straighter in that area. Then once he was feeling a lot more comfortable playing with a straight bat and keeping the risk level down, then when he was timing the ball better, then he could bring in his shot, which would get him the boundary through mid-wicket. So there's an example of the other side of it where what that might be interpreted as saying, well, the coach is telling me to play straight. He's telling me to play orthodox shot rather than flick it off mid-wicket, off to mid-wicket. But actually what the coach is saying is, this is an obvious weakness in your game. Let's make sure that you get your eye in before you start playing these clever shots, which are clearly getting you out at the start of your innings. This one's from Siv, and Siv says, I'm a 19-year-old all-rounder, but I have some doubts about how to hit the ball into long distances, especially the full toss. Let's have a listen to what Gareth had to say.
Well, that is the most timely question we've ever had, because 3 minutes ago, before I came in to do this podcast, that is exactly what a 17-year-old all-rounder was doing in the cricket bubble here at school. And he's somebody as well, he hasn't really practiced hitting that full toss and would hit that conventional shot and it would go along the ground, or he wouldn't make good contact. And it's almost sometimes, because we spend so much time practicing half volleys, length balls, back of the length and short balls, it's almost as if that full toss becomes a surprise ball and one that we're not ready for and not practiced enough. So he started to work on this. And all I do, and all I did in the session, if I can talk you through that, Siv, is set the bowling machine up for 60 miles an hour to hit about 5 or 6 inches above the baseline of the stumps on the full. And we asked him to have a swing at the ball and to hit it as hard and as far as he possibly could do. And by looking at whatever method he adopted at that point, we could then tinker around with things. And if I can talk about his method, he would generally sink into the ball and get his back leg down on the ground, and he would hit the ball from a wide base with his feet, but his back knee on the ground, and didn't find that he had the speed in his arms, because he hadn't transferred the momentum up from the ground particularly effectively to get the ball to go huge distances. So whilst we wanted to create a gap between his feet, and somebody like a Shane Watson does this brilliantly, when he's looking to hit it out of the park at the end of an innings, he'll stand with his feet close together and then extend his feet wide apart to create that power base that is momentum can be transferred up the body and into the hands and into the ball. And that's exactly what we did with this young player called Archie a little while ago. And very soon he was hitting the ball very cleanly indeed, because he felt that he was using his bottom half to impact upon the shot and not just using his arms, which it could be that you're trying to do when you hit that full toss. The next stage for him was to then get a little bit more precise about where he's trying to hit the ball. So we set up a couple of target areas straight back over the bowler's head and wide of mid-on. So that shot that you sort of drag wide of mid-on and it keeps going away from mid-on, that's hit between mid-on and the deep square leg fielder. And he started to hit that on a regular basis. Occasionally, he'd dip that back knee down on the ground, and again, his power would be lost and he wouldn't make such a good contact. But every time that he had flexion in his legs without dipping too low and width with his feet, he was able to hit the ball good distances in correct areas where they're unlikely to be good fielders. The next thing that we did was I set a field. So on our magnetic whiteboard that we have, I put a field in place which took out of the equation that one that was whacked over the top of straight mid-wicket. So I put a deep fielder out at straight mid-wicket. And then he mixed up hitting it straight back over the bowler's head. We've also playing some of the flip shots that we answered in the previous question over the top of fine leg off of the same ball. So it's not just about hitting hard and hitting for six. It's about being able to mix up those shots. And I would always encourage people to think contextually and tactically when they're developing these shots as well, so they best prepare themselves for changes in the field that the captain is obviously going to do if somebody is getting hit back over the bowler's head or if they're getting hit wider mid on. So that was the story of Archie in the nets, and I think it's a story that you can take on and practice yourself.
Okay, thank you, Gareth.
Obviously, as a 19-year-old all-rounder, you're clearly looking to play quite a positive role in the side, presumably batting at sort of 6, 7 or 8 or somewhere in that middle order or lower middle order. Generally, in sort of thinking about power and how it's generated, we've got to look at the different elements of our movement and how we swing the bat. So a couple of things I'll just be looking at is, first of all, how we're transferring our weight. So are we getting our body weight moving into the ball? And that's quite easy to assess if you're able to get a coach to actually stand at the side of you as you're in your net and just look at your body shape into the shot. Is there a positive lean into your movement and into your swing of the bat?
A camera as well, if you know someone with a camera phone or something.
I think a camera would always be great, because sometimes the coach can say what he says, but it's great to get your own eyes on what you're doing. The other thing that's really a really good way to learn to swing when we're looking to hit long is trying to generate bat speed with long limbs. So trying to extend our arms fully. And a lot of the time, the harder people try and swing, the more tense their arms become. And in tensing their arms, they become bent and they become shorter. And becoming shorter, they're then going to have a shorter lever, and the shorter lever is going to generate less power. So that's often why the confidence of hitting actually promotes power as well. Now, in saying that, one of the things we spoke about previously was how it works in a net situation, because sometimes that confidence actually only comes from seeing the ball sailing over the boundary, or at least sailing over the infield. And if you can do, that's where it's great to try and have a session where you are out in the middle. And even if it's just a few throwdowns, just to see how hard you actually can hit the ball, because a lot of the time these guys will hit the ball in the nets and they won't really be sure as to how far it's gone, which is something David mentioned previously. And just that little confidence boost of knowing that if you hit one at sort of 80 or 90% and it's already flying over the fence, because you're getting your technique and your weight transfer and you're extending your limbs really well, that can give you the confidence boost that allows you to relax more through the shot, prevents you from trying to hit too hard and tensing up. So that can be a really good way just to improve your physical execution just through a little bit of a boost of confidence.
They've done it in baseball, haven't they, for years? This idea of hitting the ball for distance. I mean, obviously, baseball hitters, you're trying to hit a home run, you know, bat speed, and you know that it's going to be, you know, a full toss, because the ball doesn't bounce in baseball, whereas it does, of course, in cricket. But the idea of hitting for range is something which has gone on for years. You know, you get the old coach just lobbing a few underarms at the big hitting guy who smashes it out of the park, and he knows exactly what it feels like to hit a home run before he's even hit that home run, because he's done it so many times in practice. And it's exactly the same if you're trying to hit a 4 or a 6. You know what it feels like to find that range. If you've got someone just giving you dollies that you can hit and work on your technique for doing that, and knowing, and it's amazing that the confidence that brings, knowing that, oh well, I've hit that one in this way and it's gone for 6. I know now what I need to do. So when you're in the middle and you do exactly the same thing, you know, you don't pull out the shot early or anything like that. You know exactly what's going to happen, and it sails over the boundary and you feel like a superstar. Okay, after Laver's refusal last week to do a soapbox, Gareth stepped in. But don't worry, we've lined him up this week to do a 60-second rant about something to do with cricket coaching or cricket playing or cricket in general. So Gareth, your soapbox this week starts now.
I think you said Gareth there actually, David, but I'll start anyway.
Sorry, neighbours.
That's fine.
Let's start again. Okay, starts now.
Okay, well, as is becoming a theme, my soapbox seems to be a rant every week, and once again it is. And one of my big things is looking after the ball. And to my astonishment, I was watching a game about 10 days ago, which was obviously very, very, very early in the season. The pitch conditions were really wet. And a young boy bowled a beautiful delivery. This was an under-12 game, swung the ball away, took the outside edge, keeper diving catch, superb. Doesn't happen a lot in junior cricket at that sort of age. The keeper then proceeded to roll the ball across the wet outfield to the umpire, who then picked it up, popped it in his pocket. And the next guys came in and they proceeded to go and score about 70 for the next wicket. So my point is, don't do all the hard work in the winter if you're then going to go and miss out a basic skill of looking after an essential bit of equipment. So when you've got a ball, look after it, keep it dry and shiny, because that's your biggest weapon.
Okay, and that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. As we normally do, we have a little bit of wrapping up to do. The first of which is to decide on the winner of this week's prize. And Lavers, you're stepping in for Gareth this week. Reliable super sub. And the questions were Anaf's question about playing orthodox or unorthodox and whether his batting average was good enough. And then we had Siv's question about hitting the full toss long distances. So which one did you prefer this week?
I'd actually like to go with the first question about orthodox and unorthodox batting, because it's such an interesting topic these days of to what is orthodox and what isn't orthodox. And it's clear that also, in addition to that, he's quite willing to make a change to his game. If he gets the right advice, he's willing to develop his orthodox game by the sounds of it, or similarly, commit more to what he's doing as an unorthodox cricketer. So I think he's obviously got a real desire to try and improve and add something to his game. And I'd like to go with that, if that's okay.
Fabulous. And I think Anaf has won one recently as well. So he's racking up the online coaching courses. Of course, if you want to find out more about Pitch Vision Academy's online coaching, head over to pitchvision.com/academy and you'll find information about the videos that we've got there. Kevin Peterson, Michael Bevan, Ian Pont, Gary Palmer, lots of superstar names who can give you plenty of information about how to improve your game. So Lavers, Gareth isn't here, but I understand you have the contact details for people who want to get in touch with the show and have their question read out and have the chance of winning a prize.
Absolutely. They can get to us on 0203 239 7543, or they can drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yep, and international phone numbers are also available at pitchvision.com if you're calling from anywhere else in the world. You can just contact us. We're using the Skype to do all that kind of clever stuff. If you want to get in touch with us via social media, you can do that. Our Twitter is at pitchvisionacad. I'm looking after things there, and you can find Gareth and Lavers, and even if you look hard enough, Burners on the Twitter. So have a search round for those guys. If you want to head over to our Facebook page, there's lots going on there. Plenty of people have given us a thumbs up over there, nearly 30,000 of them. And they're chatting away about cricket videos, cricket coaching, and getting bowled out for 3 runs. And that's facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can subscribe to the show. Just go to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Click on that subscribe button. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you want to use something else, then go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details on how to subscribe. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavers.
Thanks, David.